interested in the subject began in 1949 when I read Donald Kehoe's articles in True magazine about flying saucers, and I thought that they appeared to be quite factual and worth taking seriously. And then later on, I talked to military and civilian pilots there in Honolulu. I was living in Hawaii at the time, who had the personal sightings of flying saucers, and this convinced me that the things were real. But I talked to and worked with qualified observers, and my work as director of Borderland Sciences Research Associates is to correlate material on sightings and analyze it for a possible value, you see. And I know, as far as I'm concerned, the things are real. There's no question about that. I've flown 10,000 hours in the air, a military pilot, for years. And then he tells you that one night in one of his flights, he saw something which raised the hair on the back of his head, a glowing object flying past his plane, and then has a ground radar station call him up and ask him to check on the location of an unidentified flying object in the sky. You've got an objective sighting, verified or backed up by mechanical or electronic equipment. And if you're flying in the plane at the time, and this man is the pilot, and your life is in his hands, you'd better believe him. A Navy pilot flying the Mars flying boats from San Francisco to Honolulu for years. And he told me one night, being on the bridge of the plane, about halfway across, and dead ahead of the plane in the sky was what appeared to be a very bright planet. And it was glowing white, as most of the planets look in the sky, Venus or Jupiter or whatever. So he picked up a pair of binoculars to get a closer look at it, or a better look at it. He was surprised to see that it was going through all the colors of the rainbow. So this wasn't visible to normal sight, at least without the glasses. And as he watched it and thought this was really an unusual way for a planet to look, the thing suddenly moved sideways. And planets don't do that. And then he realized he was looking at an unidentified flying object, so he called the rest of the crew up onto the bridge, a total of 7 people, all Navy personnel, and they all confirmed that they could see this object out there. And then about that time, he was called up by Weather Station Uncle. This is the Weather Bureau ship that's on station out there in the Pacific to give weather information and directions to ships and planes. And they said they had a UFO on their radar screen at maximum distance, about 70 or 80 miles, and vectored him to the location of this UFO, and it corresponded to the glowing object they were looking at. And then the lieutenant told me that about that time, the thing just grew smaller and smaller and disappeared. Now, this lieutenant was so interested in flying saucers that he invited me to give an illustrated lecture on them to the Kokua Club, informal group that met once a week there at the lunchroom, the restaurant at the International Airport at Honolulu. This is a group of commercial pilots and Air Force personnel, and military and civilian flying people, to try to give them some idea of what this subject consists of. Of course, I sat at the speaker's table, and there were 3 other people there at the table with me, a civilian officer of Hawaiian Airlines and a Navy captain, and this lieutenant, who was the pilot of the Mars flying boat. And they, in turn, told their flying saucer sightings, and I was the only one at the table who hadn't actually seen one or didn't claim to have seen one, yet I was the lecturer. We have, I might say, literally hundreds of flying saucer pictures in our files. Very interesting matter to compare them, of course. Some may be fake, but others appear to be genuine. One that I would consider authentic, because it's on file with the government in Washington somewhere, because it was taken by a member of the Ground Observation Corps. This gentleman was on duty as a Ground Observation Corps member, and one night in July 1952 in Jersey City, looking toward New York City, and he saw a glowing object in the sky in the direction of New York City, and he got an excellent picture of it that night, and this picture is on file, was turned in as a part of his official report of having seen an unidentified flying object in the sky. So this is one example of government duplicity, we might say, when official agencies issue a report saying that they have no physical evidence that flying saucers exist. We do know that they have some pictures. And they aren't going to believe their own observers. Who are they to believe? We have had communications. Now, that this, of course, gets into the area of the fourth dimension and extrasensory perception or telepathy in many cases. And then you move out of the field of what's so-called orthodox scientific inquiry into the area of human fallibility or the receptivity of the human mind, and this is where orthodox science doesn't want to go. Well, of course, probably one of the best, undoubtedly, is that of Dan Fry, who was a technician with Aerojet back in 1950 out there at White Sands Proving Ground, and apparently he had was offered a ride in a spaceship on the night of July 4th, 1950, and accepted. Now, at that time, he thought he was in his physical body, and as far as he was concerned, it was a physical experience. And yet he has, in talking to occult scientists and students of metaphysics since then, he has had to admit the possibility that his body might actually have been asleep, so to speak, or in trance in his quarters there at White Sands, and that the experience was really not physical at all. And this, of course, is what makes the whole thing so difficult to understand. We don't deny it. This also is a good reason why the authorities are so reluctant to come out with any authoritative explanation of flying saucers. We have several eyewitness accounts of crashed spaceships, saucers in New Mexico and Arizona in 1949. And then we have one which was crashed on the island of Spitsbergen in the North Arctic region in July of 1952. That was seen coming down by Norwegian jet planes and followed down. Then there was an inquiry by the Norwegian government, and after 3 years, in 1955, they finally released their report of the analysis of this crashed spaceship, and the conclusion was that it had been made by processes unknown to any government here on Earth, and apparently was not manufactured here on Earth. The materials were not known to present technologies and science. The report was released to the public through the newspapers in 1955. I have a translation of the news clipping here. Colonel Gernot Darnbile of the Norwegian Air Force Board of Inquiry made the statement after 3 years of looking at the thing. I don't know why more people don't know this. It's in the newspapers. And maybe they forget these things because they don't want to remember them. Of course, we're in the area now, you see, of the philosophical problems involved. Having accepted the reality of the things, we've gone on to the area of why they are here and who they might be, and what would be the impact of on our society of a general realization and acceptance of the idea that outer space is inhabited and that there may be races superior to us in evolution elsewhere in the universe.